I have no idea why any of you aren't in the social engineering panel, because that's always extremely entertaining. But okay, good. We got rid of one person. So this will be a somewhat there's some lots of really entertaining things to look at in this topic, but I'm the only person in the room who's going to get to see them. So I'm just going to like start my slideshow. I know, thank you. I asked the wrong person if it was everything was all set. The person you should always ask the AV people if they have the equipment, not just some random guy with a number 2 badge. Book. Yeah, no, that would be a little too much. So the basic topic here is ghosts and zombies in the machine, which is just a kind of completely random collection of just things that I find a little interesting and strange about the internet. This is kind of two topics that, and I'll be focusing on two topics that are of, I found kind of fascinating, that have definitely kind of flourished in the last few years. The first one is, there's no real kind of official term of art, so you can call them web ghosts or zombie pages or whatever, and it's just the existence of all the, you know, you've got, what, there's hundreds of millions of blogs now, there's like all the pages and websites. I mean, sure, there's all the kind of like, you know, there's the kind of the infinite cruft of the internet and the web, where just, you know, there's abandoned websites that, like, you know, just kind of slowly fade away or just are existing on the internet archive and stuff. But when, more interesting is all these personal blogs and profiles of all these people, and then the people die and the pages don't. And it's like, this is something that I came on to originally when one of my friends up in Boston, who is, ooh. Oh, of course, this is like a cool dongle, but it's not, I don't think it's the iBook one, no, but it's, you know, it's nice and white, so, you know, it has to have the completely, you know, proprietary little, yeah, tiny little thing. I'm sure somebody here could do it. Well, the only problem is the wireless doesn't work here, so you'd you'd have to plug in the computer to the... Well, I was doing like PowerPoint and the web and all these things, and... we could do that. So, either way, and... Yeah, okay, well, if you want to come up and we can, and you can join the presentation as well. So I think we should give him a round of applause. Well, we should give him a round of applause and then we'll find out if this actually works. So let's see, actually, I would recommend... That's probably the, yeah. Okay, so we're going to make a little, nice little package and stick it on a flash drive. So that's one topic, and then another one is, which is really completely unrelated, except that you could call it, it's, you know, other than the zombie concept, is of kind of the zombie armies and blue-bitty-blue, which are just like, you know, all the botnets. And I'm sure there are people here who know considerably more about it than me who are here. But I don't think anybody's really giving a talk about them. So, you know, I get to be the person doing it. Yeah, this is that's for the projector. And those are, again, like, botnets have seen extraordinary growth in the last, you know, few years, and there's kind of some really interesting stuff going on with that. I'm trying to you know, completely multitask here. Let's see. If I do... And then this is the interesting thing is, oh well. Well, we can kind of fake that, I guess. So, here. We got that. So, well, and hopefully I'll be able to show you these pictures and we'll kind of catch up. But so this is my friend, like Kirsten Malone. She was the super cool chick. She had like, you know, 120 something friends on Friendster, you know, because this is back in like in the 2002. So everybody wasn't on MySpace yet. And also we're old. So we're not, you know, we're not the 14-year-old to 23 set. And she was like, you know, super cool bossing chick, and was riding her bike without a helmet and got hit by a car and died. And, you know, and then kind of like the weird thing is that her friend Sarah Page is like, you know, still sticking around. And now, so now it says that she's 31, you know, but that was, you know, because 2 years have passed. But the, one of the big differences between Friendster and MySpace, other than the fact that there are about 94 million people on MySpace now, or, you know, some vague number approximating that, or like in 2005, it was at 17 million. So, I mean, the growth rate there is a little extreme. Is that also profiles on MySpace, like it's the default setting is that people can just continue adding comments and they're automatically posted. So after you die, your page becomes like this, you know, happy tribute slash people getting to write mean things about you when you're dead. And it's really interesting because, like, you know, the whole space of how we deal with death and all these things has always been, you know, extremely well, you know, modulated by tradition and culture and convention. And in other words, you go to funerals and there's all the deliberate ceremony and, you know, and obituaries are written by these, you know, old crusty guys in the newspapers, and they have a very specific form about what, you know, what is it that goes into an obituary. Like, if you die in an interesting way, you get the story about, like, you know, you were hit by a car that fell off of a truck, or you were eaten by an alligator, or you were, you know, hit by a car while you were riding your bike, or you, you know, were some guy who was 19 years old and lived in New Bedford, and you, after you, like, assaulted and killed some people in a gay bar, you got killed in a shootout in Kansas, like, you know, with the cops. But the whole point is that, you know, that's kind of where the story would end, and then there might be, you know, a little obituary that would, you know, note that, the, you know, they were survived by their mother or whatever, and their cat. But the difference is now you get to go on their pages and you see that these people, you know, were, well, like the guy who, the Jacob Robida was the one who did the gay murder stuff in New Bedford about, it's pretty much exactly a year ago. And he had a, you know, a really appropriate MySpace page for someone who would do that. He was a big, insane Clown Posse fan. And unfortunately, MySpace took it down, but like some people have archived it. And then there have been, if we take a step back from the stories, and we think about just kind of the statistics. So there's like about, you know, approximately 100 million people on MySpace. And, you know, they're mostly in the kind of 15 to, you know, 40, or, you know, even less, but let's say, you know, the 15 to 24, 25 to 44 age group. We're talking, so for every 100,000 people that are, you know, between the age of 15 and 24, about 90 of them die per year. And so that's like 29 cars, 18, you know, homicides, 12 suicides. And then for like the 25 to 44, you get more you get more AIDS and cancer and heart attacks. The suicide rate actually is higher when you're older, over 25, which is kind of interesting. But the homicide rate is lower, maybe because you're dying of cancer instead or something. What that translates in terms of the MySpace users is that means that there's about 100,000 people with MySpace pages that are, you know, and I'm sure not all of those 94 million are actually active, but, you know, that means about 100,000 people with MySpace pages are dying this year. So 100,000 of the pages that are on the site right now are for dead people. And so that's like about 8,000 per month, or 270 per day, or about, you know, 10 people during this lecture, 10 or 11 people, you know, approximately, will have died. Ah, yes. Well, we're getting something. And I don't know, I just kind of find that kind of somewhat fascinating that, you know, there's this infinite well of dead people that's just kind of popping up with all the really bad backgrounds and their you know, their musical tastes and stuff. And let's see, it'd be, well, hopefully when we get this up, if we do, I can show you some of the more interesting pages. And there's actually, right now, there's one guy who's compiling these. He started My Death Space about a year ago and has a really sweet logo. And he has about, like, you know, 400 posted now. I mean, you know, and so we're talking, like, this minuscule proportion of them, and he has this huge backlog, like, of people submitting the pages, and, like, he, you know, he hooks them up to, like, in an official obituary and links to the profile and kind of does it without comment, and then there's, like, a forum, and so some people are like, haha, this is, you know, this guy was such a fucking retard. I mean, you know, and, like, when you kill yourself by, like, climbing into a helium balloon, like, you know, you shouldn't do things like that. Like, but at least the people who did that, it was this girl and a guy down in Florida, so they did it together. So, I mean, you know, I think, you know, if you're going to kill yourself in a dumb way, you should do it with someone else, because then they'll, you know, then they'll be like, at least there's someone else that was as dumb as you. Right, exactly. I mean, like, you know, but, you know, and it's what's kind of fun thing is that it's, you could think of this as making people talk more frankly about suicide and about the dangers of, like, the choking game, which is, you know, where I guess you hang yourself until you start choking, and then if you, you know, hopefully you don't die, but sometimes you do, and then people get to look at your MySpace profile. What I'll do is I'll kind of fast forward to the next topic, and I mean, if this thing starts working, ooh, that's looking like your screen. That's sweet, and we can take a look at some of these profile pages. Oh, and there's one that is really spooky. The girl got eaten by an alligator, like, the day before, or actually, like, the day that she died. I mean, I don't know if she was eaten by the alligator. She was attacked and killed. But, you know, they use their mouths, so. That day before, she wrote a little entry in her blog how she had woken up, you know, and she'd been, like, kind of sleeping with her boyfriend, and I can pull it up. I don't have to do it by memory. I keep on forgetting that I'm online. So let me just.
Your files are here.
Oh, sweet. Well, here. We'll...
Oh, wow. Look at it this way.
I know you can go and read backwards.
Which one?
I don't know. The PowerPoint one will work. There we go. Ooh! Yay, Microsoft. Well, there's not really any excuse, but it's not my computer. So. Let's see. Oh, that's right. That's what I wanted to look at.
No, the PowerPoint didn't work.
Ah, man, the PowerPoint didn't work. Because it's a Mac PowerPoint file. Yeah. Okay. So, well, let's just go to the web, and we can look at some MySpace zombie pages. I could do that. Who is this? Why is this? That's annoying. Well, it's probably a different, he might have an older version of the application. So, in which case, I could, if I had saved it as, type of thing. This is just crap. So if you actually just want to pull up a web page, we can website, we can just a browser, we can just do some stuff. That is bizarre. Okay, and the connection's having troubles here. Yeah, the network's kind of hammered, I think. So the other topic that has been looking at is the kind of zombie networks, zombie armies, botnets, and that's, and really all it is it's a kind of illegal and intentional distributed computing, or it's completely intentional on the part of the people who are taking over the computers, but the people whose computers they are generally don't know that their cycles are being used for either illegal gain and profit, and it's kind of if you look at kind of the comparison, the biggest legitimate distributed computing project is SETI at Home, and it's got about 5.2 million participants, and so that's what works as it has performed on September 26, 2001. It performed a total of 1,021 floating point operations. It's acknowledged by the Guinness World Records as the largest computation in history. With over 900,000, so it has 5.2 million participants, but 900,000 computers in the system, and that's the ability to compute over 250 teraflops. That's as of April 2006. Whereas BlueJeans, the supercomputer, that's at 280. So that's that's pretty badass. Of course, the funny thing is that the botnets are on the same scale as these projects, and there's a lot more. Well, I don't know if there's a lot more, but let's assume that there probably are. There was one relatively recent case where in the Netherlands, where this guy who's it's these three people, 19, 22, and 27, were arrested for a network that, the police first said was 100,000, and then they said it was 1.5 million. But in other words, it's some kind of completely fuzzy, unknown, very large number, because, the whole thing is that the computers just keep on getting infected and infected. It was the Toxbot Trojan, which they installed, and then they installed adware and spyware. And they did a denial of service attack on this U.S. company to an extortion attempt, because they were we're gonna take your website down if you don't don't pay us up. And then they didn't pay us up, and then they took down the website. But then they got arrested, and so you shouldn't do it. Don't. And they also phished PayPal accounts and eBay, and I'm not sure. I wasn't able to find out what cool stuff they bought, but it's one of those things that about half the time these are there's a that I mean it's the problem with most criminals only You know, they don't think really, it's like you don't think big enough. Like, if you can do this, if you know how to do this, like, you know, it's only a small flip to figure out how to make millions of dollars, like, you know, legally. You know, and that's kind of like the lesson of, you know, governments. I mean, on the other hand, like, say, I mean, you know, working for the NSA is a lot less cool. So, I mean, like, what TalkSpot did is that it's, you know, what all these things do is that they just use kind of known Windows exploits. This one uses kind of a SQL Server privilege escalation, a DLL buffer overflow. You know, they just use known patched Windows vulnerabilities, go in, like install themselves and open a backdoor and basically just start contacting IRC, various IRC channels on different networks that on different, you know, like servers that have generally kind of amusing names, like what is it, like, you know, on martiansong.com and mysecurename.com and, you know, things like goingformars.com, you know, just like really hip websites. And they and then you just launch various attacks, and they're pretty much, I mean, there's always some profit motive. Some of them are done with a lot of stuff, you know, in like kind of, you know, there's a growth in the how do you say, like kind of organized crime doing things in mafias, and it's a lot of it. Pretty much, you know, it's definitely a majority is overseas, or, you know, is found as outside of the United States. And like, you know, another variation was another group was Moop, like M00P, which is like a. There was a guy in England, you know, it was a 63-year-old in England, a 28-year-old in Scotland, a 19-year-old in Finland. And they wrote the Ryknos Trojan, which was actually based on the Sony rootkit. So, like, you know, got like a 50,000 computer botnet. And so that's, so you can, you know, Sony's, I think you have to give them props for basically creating... I mean, because there's actually relatively little investment in creating new malware, the new software. Most of the time, it's just people taking the code and tweaking a thing or two. And so Sony did a really good job of, you know, paying companies to do the real innovation to find new attacks. And of course, you know, the reality is that company, you know, stole a bunch of stuff their own way too. But, you know, I really do think you should give Sony credit for advancing the botnet field and getting away with it, which is pretty cool. Well, no, I guess they had to give away some CDs, and I think they were like Kelly Clarkson. So, I mean, you know, who wins, really? And, you know, and they were just doing it to, like, generate spam click-throughs. I mean, so it's this whole thing. It's like, if you've got 100,000 computers at your control, you can do these things that'll, you know, they'll generate a few thousand bucks a month. And, you know, it's pretty cool. Or you can, you know, or you could, like, cure cancer with the legitimate stuff. But it's, you know, it's not generally huge money, except for the time. But what they can also do is they do a lot of key logging, huge phishing for like credit cards and stuff. I mean, I'm sure if Steve Rambam hadn't been arrested, he would have been talking about how, like, you know, everybody has all of your credit cards, or not necessarily the people in this room, because we're smart and we use all proper security protocols, but. You know, in a general sense, like there's, you know, if it's being used, you know, if you've ever interacted with anything with a Windows machine, you know, electronically, you know, you can assume that, you know, there's no real reason that that data is closed down. The group that I've got, you know, so I want to give some credit here. A lot of this information has been coming from Shadow Server, which is a volunteer organization that pretty much does all the things to try to kind of track and have the tools to take down these botnets. They run, they set up and run honeypots where they, you know, create just aggressively open computers that are just saying, please infect me. And then they use that to track people. They also regularly, they also investigate the software themselves. So they, you know, when they get the new, when they get infected, they go through and look that, you know, in other words, separate from what the antivirus companies are doing. They also track these botnets, which is one of the kind of the most interesting things. And so, and they create a list, a running list of the various kind of command and control centers. So all of these botnets you have, there's some IP address that all these computers are like being controlled by. And though, and so it's the, in the, like, so one of the kind of the, you know, things that you can do as a civilian, if you are, don't want, you know, if you want to protect and kind of fight the things, is in the same way as that they have, and well, actually these are not, these are often a strong overlap with the with spammer networks. In other words, these, you know, you have your kind of blackout lists of open relay servers. There are also these black, so Shadow Server also creates a blackout list of botnet control centers. And, you know, so I mean, this is kind of, it's, you're not going to win the game by blocking out these sites, but it's something that, you know, it gives you something of an edge. And then they also work with the private companies and with law enforcement to try to track them down. Oh yeah, and that's one of the, and with that, kind of their other main group is tracking the information that gets captured. So, like whether or not some credit card number has been compromised, like what these lists of credit cards and passwords and accounts are that being compromised. So they're definitely a very kind of interesting gray hat group or white hat that has lots of, you know, bad information. So they're white hats. They're not bad people. And actually, they do, they've worked, the people that that have worked the best with them, they were saying, is like the Secret Service actually care a lot, because the Secret Service handles what, like federal monetary transfer stuff, banking fraud. And the, and so they've kind of found that if we look at the botnet statistics, about half of them are just denial of service related, kind of like, so the dumbest thing that you just have a botnet do is you just have a all hammer some site simultaneously. About 30% of them do like adware and spam, like, so they will install adware, they'll send out spam, and then about 20% are just doing like spreading, just involved in like growing themselves, doing keylogging, and you know, and they're not none of those classifications aren't necessarily exclusive. Some of the things that they found are the how botnets are evolving, you know, so to speak, is that there's, you know, and some of this, the guy I was talking to was saying that they're not, in a certain sense, not fundamentally interesting. I mean, it's like, it's kind of the same piece of software being run by people who are, you know, they're not doing it to create art, or, you know, they're just infecting computers and then, like, typing the the commands in their little IRC channel to have them, you know, go and do something. And so it's, you know, it's kind of code monkey stuff. But the so the innovations are basically in avoiding getting caught and doing things like running the command and control centers like from your PDA or, you know, so like you're just hanging out at a coffee shop and doing things like that. And there's also more use of encryption. They're starting to move away from just using IRC. They're multi-server CNCs. That's the command and control. And so that's one of the, those are the types of things that they're tracking and, you know, and seeing. And then, so what can you do as to kind of avoid getting, you know, becoming a zombie? So, which is don't let people eat your brains. It's the number, well, I guess they don't have to eat your brains. They just have to bite you, right? Is that kind of the standard zombie thing? Right, right, yeah. Well, so don't do that, yeah. And just don't do any of the things that, like, what is it, like Worcestershire sauces helps, I think. So, but for your computers, it's the, I mean, in some sense, a lot of it's just the basic thing. Just keep up with the patches. You know, have your antivirus software. Don't open strange email, et cetera. You know, the kind of the basic things that, like, if everybody did it, we'd be a lot better. Now, secondly, using an internet detection system like Snort, you know, is a very good idea. And those would also, like, that software will often include the kind of like the botnet rule sets, like the lists of botnets that's compiled by groups like Shadow Server, and they'll also have kind of like the botnet signatures of the, you know, of the network things. And so, like, when you get up to your sysadmin stuff, or even, I mean, your personal computer, like on a personal network or on a corporate one, you want to have the proper firewall configuration, and egress filtering is, I mean, if you, you know, it's like if you want to lock down your network, is that you just do it so, like, you say, even if I get infected, my computer, I'm not going to let my computer contact the command center. So you say, like, you know, you just don't get to use, you know, in other words, if you block IRC connections, like, your computer can't be controlled through IRC connections, even if it has the software and even if it's been trojaned. And so, if you control the outgoing connections from a computer, from your computers, you will. That's one of the kind of the primary things. And then it's also the classic things that, you know, change the passwords. Don't use the same password for everything, because that's one of the big things that these people would do, is they'll just grab the passwords and, you know, on something that's relatively insecure, and then they'll just start plugging it into eBay and PayPal and whatever, and, you know, and then, like, in life is gravy. Or I don't know if that's the right cliche, but I do like gravy. And you should do things like do deep scanning. I mean, in other words, like, do more, I mean, do a kind of a full, like, you know, try to do the full review of your logs and really pay attention to the kind of unusual traffic. So kind of know what your expected network traffic is. And when you see something that is strange, it's, you know, probably something that's you don't like. Of course, there's also the whole thing, if you avoid Windows, you're going to be a lot better off. But that's not to say that, like, you can't have botnets that are being run on, like, Linux and Mac machines, because even if the operating system doesn't have basically any exploitable vulnerabilities or vulnerabilities that have been exploited, if you're running, say, your PHP bulletin board system, then if there's and this is, I'm not speaking entirely hypothetically, there was this PHP vulnerability that was exploited, and so there was this network that was using, like, Linux and OS X computers and running on them. And so that's in other words, you can basically be smug about it, like if you're, you know, if you don't use Windows, but but that doesn't mean that you won't actually ever get infected. And so, kind of shadow servers. Here's a little kind of description, kind of self-description from them. So it's shadowserver.org. They're kind of monitoring channel on IRC. They're on Freenode. And it's shadowserver.org is the channel. And they couple botnet and malware research with gathering of intelligence, sharing it via the open source community, and building reports and data-driven block lists. We do work directly with law enforcement, and that gives us another unique angle. Our team members are from all over the world. Most are U.S.-based, but they have a good presence in Europe and Australia. So it's... It's the internet world. This is where I think my friendly computer cohort escaped. So at Shadow Server they have it's a fun site to just even kind of poke around on because they have the list of the botnets they're tracking, they have a list of tickets, and each one has what the specific malware was that originates the botnet, and so they picked it up when they first find a botnet, it's usually through another botnet or one of their honeypots, or if it tries to infect them. They get an email with it, and so what they do is they MD5 hash the malware, classify it according to its function, put that up on the ticket. They put the hash of the software. Then they take the, and this is kind of the fun thing is they put up the CNC dialogue that takes place on the kind of the IRC channel that's using it, So, for example, one ticket was like an IRC botnet. Looks like an ordinary IRC chat session, except that it's like they're not, you know, kind of talking in people. It's more like looking at, you know, a file sharing IRC connection. And like they have something like the topic for the 666 channel. You know, it's like, you know, because that's kind of the great thing about these is that since they're all, you know, they're, it's all edgy. And hackery, it's like Hacksaw. So it's like 666 is my computer, is my channel. And so like the command would be like scan 61.1.x.x. What it does is it then that sends that command out to all the computers in the botnet to start scanning, start port scanning 61.1. And then once enough machines are found, the malware is downloaded to the victim machine and execute or queued for execution upon the next boot. That machine is now part of the botnet, and the same channel commands will work. And so it's kind of that is one of the fun things is that you really do get this. It's nice software. These things and they work well. And that's kind of what they do. But let's see if this is pulling up. There we go. So that's, in many ways, a lot of kind of the prepared text I have. There'd be more. I'm really sad that there aren't pretty pictures because, you know, it's especially of all the MySpace pages because, you know, it's sad when the nice people die and then there are some people that you can tell why they did. If you act like you're a kind of a psychotic racist crazy dude who really likes gun, you know, and has like, I mean, here's my picture, my MySpace profile, and here's my gun, and I'm like hate, you know, like, you know, and I hate gays and Jews, and like, then you can kind of predict that. Well, let's see. We're 15 minutes before the hour. So, if anybody has any questions or comments, I don't know if anybody in the audience has experience with botnets, or if this is a great time to come up and add your two cents. So, or you can either come up to the mic or just chat.
Hi, is this on?
Yeah.
I have not experience necessarily with botnets, but I have a question kind of combining the idea of dead people's pages on MySpace and botnets. I'm sure there are botnets that were owned by people who are either in prison or disbanded or have gone underground. So that would mean presumably there's a numerous botnets out there that are not controlled by anyone at the moment.
Right.
And I'm wondering... aside from source routing or something like that, is there a way to take those over? And
well, it's funny. It actually is this kind of like really big problem in the whole, like, how do you deal with botnets? Because it's relatively easy to shut down the command center, but it's pretty much impossible to disinfect the network. Like, I mean, basically, you know, kind of the best thing that you can do is you can get kind of the general, like, I mean, if you can get ISPs and such to block, you know, to ignore the track, you know, those traffic calls. But the computers themselves, yeah, they're zombies. They're going to always do that forever. Taking it over, I think basically the thing is that once the network has been shut down by somebody, I wouldn't want to try to take over that, because the whole point is that people have already shut it down, and you're like, well, if the dude who used to be running is in jail, like, now I can totally take it over. Like, I don't know. That doesn't seem like the best idea. Like, but I mean, I don't actually specifically know, but I mean, anybody who could have, you know, who knows the kind of like the password, for, you know, running the network, you know, being the kind of being authenticated as the owner of the channel, for example, if it's an IRC botnet, then you're the command. But yeah, no, I mean, basically, it's that type of thing. Now, on the other hand, like, you could certainly, for example, I have the feeling like if you wanted to, you could go and you know, on your own, try to find other people's botnets that haven't been, like, you know, caught yet, and try to take them over from the people, and you could, but that's, you know, it's relatively easy to start your own botnets, basically.
Yeah, right.
At some point that's why if, like, people ever start, like, really implanting stuff in their heads, is, you know, or it's like, well, you know, you're taking over people implanted RFIDs, you know, like, you can do some, you know, some great stuff of, like, people have, like, implanted credit cards, and, you know, and you can start doing these things. If you want, I can do some little, you know, dead tree, little transfers. So mydeadspace.com is fun, and it's kind of easy to remember. One of the most interesting, and I really wish I could have pulled it up because it's kind of great, one of the speakers at H2K, the 2000 Hope, was Chris McKinstry, who was this guy who was running the MindPixel General Artificial Consciousness Project, in which he was, like, getting people to, like, type in little things, little statements that are either true or false, and he was compiling this, like, data, this whole list of what people, you know, kind of like the general knowledge of humanity, and it was all going to be compiled into this kind of, like, you know, artificial intelligence that would have this emergent intelligence. And he had been, like, working down in the radio telescopes down in South America and helping to, like, discover supernovas and things. Unfortunately, he was kind of like, I don't know how many people have seen A Beautiful Mind. but he was kind of like, what's his name there? Yeah, Russell Crowe. John Nash. And he was kind of like that. In other words, he was somebody who was genuinely very smart, but he was also completely crazy. And so the Mind Pixel project was very much kind of like Nash's little conspiratorial jottings, where the information coming in, that was all real, and he really was compiling it into a database, but there was no like artificial intelligence. Like all it would do is kind of like 2/3 of the time it would guess yes, and 1/3 of the time it would say, two-thirds of the time it would say this is a true statement, and a third of the time it would say this is a false statement. There was no intelligence, no parsing of this. And in 2004, I believe, he wrote an online suicide note. He said, this is what an online suicide note looks like. And he had various quotes about, killing yourself from various speakers. And then, the next day, he did. And I actually only found out about this because I was like kind of looking up some little old AI stuff that I had, bookmarked and came upon this, and I'm like, wait a second, so I read the blog and I'm like, wait a second, this is a little weird. And then, it turned out he'd killed himself. And unfortunately, that page has been taken down, but it's been archived. And that is one of the things. This is like a lot of these things fade away, and it's quite possible that MySpace is, it's a good bet that within the next 5-10 years or less than that, MySpace will have a whole division of people that, and a whole institutional policy, formalized policy about how to deal with the profiles of people who have died. It'll be probably a standard thing that you put in your will or next of attorney or something, or it's this big thing because most people who are 15 don't have wills, but they have MySpace pages. So at some point, when you create your MySpace profile, you'll probably be asked to fill out a provisional will to transfer your electronic assets to what your electronic, World of Warcraft, MySpace, et cetera, next of kin is. This age of zombies will sadly fade away, and we'll just be left with people who are nicely buried. I guess that might be a good place to end the talk, but we have time for one or two more questions. But otherwise, I will thank you all. Oh, is that... Okay, good. One more. Excellent.
I have a question.
Yeah.
I was just wondering what your take is on distributed computing and what that might do for cancer, for SETI, or anything like that. Or any capabilities that those companies might have.
Well, I mean, there's definitely one of the. I mean, there's real stuff as. I mean, the SETI project is. It's a good example of. It's a kind of a probably quixotic pursuit type of thing. You're right. I mean, but on things that is kind of like on problems that are knowably dealable with by supercomputers, like protein folding, and searching through genetic materials. I mean, there's absolutely no. Distributed computing, they have essentially. As long as it's the right kind of task, they have essentially the equivalent power of, a traditional supercomputer. There are the cutting edge research of grid computing, where in one of kind of the ironies is that it's the internet, the ARPANET, the ARPANET was originally designed as a distributed computing. Network, the idea that people would use the network to communicate with each other was not what it was about. It was about sharing, it was time sharing. It was about sharing resources on the having the computers share their resources, so you'd have effectively a more powerful computing grid. And that vein of academic research and approach has never stopped. And what the now what that will end up being, 5, 10, 25, 50 years from now, I mean, you can, make your extrapolations and, read William Gibson and Eric Drexler and stuff, and we'll have emergent consciousnesses unless you believe that the human mind is magic and can't be paralleled by computers because they're, binary or something. I think you basically, you should have your computer be doing distributed computing stuff. It's a good thing. On the other hand, you're using electricity, so you're like heating up the earth when you're using it. So all these computers luring away, it's a good thing. But I think the most interesting thing there is just that the botnet, the legitimate distributed computing world and the botnet world are basically the same size. All right, well, thanks a lot, and come again.